Oh, the shape that will get. You've let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I'm not playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Well, the Premier League is over, but football here on Team 33 continues. And a call here with you for the next hour or so. Coming up on tonight's show, we are chatting Bobby Robson, the life and legacy of the man, the England manager, the Barcelona manager, the Newcastle manager, an all-round gentleman. If you want to listen back to any of this show, you can find us as part of the OTB Podcast Network, available now on the brand new spanking OTB Sports app, available in your Google Play Store or Apple Store as well. Or you can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/offtheball. If you want to get involved with the show tonight, text us on 53106, or you can tweet us at Team33. That's all spelled out in words. Colin Buig and Kieran Bradley are with me to discuss now. Lads, we're talking about Bobby Robson. He is one of the most beloved men in the game and has been missed since he passed away in 2009. This documentary is one of probably the best football documentaries you're going to watch in terms of summing up the character for what he was, and there's some really brilliant parts in this. We'll delve deeper into it first, but firstly, Kieran and Colm, I'll go to you first. Your memories of Bobby Robson, your thoughts initially on the film, and how this kind of sums him up as the man and football man that he was.
It's just one of the most beautiful and poignant documentaries, let alone sports documentaries, I've seen, and it's a documentary that brings out the best in its contributors, and what a lineup it is to pay tribute to the great man, like Pep Guardiola, Jose Mourinho, Alex Ferguson, the original Ronaldo, Paul Gascoigne, and they all love him and cherish him. And for people from my generation, when you say the name Bobby Robson, you think England manager during Italia 90 and the penalties against West Germany, and then you think of him at Newcastle. But this is one of the most successful managers in the modern era, where he went to Holland and won the Dutch league twice at PSV Eindhoven, won the Portuguese league and cup with Porto, had a really good spell at Sporting Lisbon, and won the Cup Winners Cup and Copa del Rey with Barcelona, signed Ronaldo. Just an unbelievable achievement, not to mention winning the FA Cup and UEFA Cup with little old Ipswich Town. Phenomenal manager, and this documentary really demonstrates how great of a person he was, more than anything.
Yeah, Kieran, we've spoken about the characters of the game quite a bit over the last couple of weeks, especially when you're dealing with sports documentaries and films, when you're dealing with real life people and how people come across in these things and how they're treated by the people above the powers that be in the football clubs. And throughout his career, for a man as beloved and seemed to be as just loved by everyone in each of the clubs that he went to, and he had so much success, what really strikes me in this documentary is how badly he was treated by the powers that be in football.
Yeah, he was always fairly badly treated. Like, the Barcelona stands out, and I think the fact that it seemed to me, at least, that the president didn't appear in the documentary suggests that he probably knows that he didn't treat him especially well. I think the words that I would ascribe to Bobby Robson generally would be a gentleman. I don't think I've ever heard anyone in the game have a bad word to say about him. And I know, obviously, look, once someone passes away, it's you know, rude to speak ill of the dead. But it was just, you could see from the way that he conducted himself, he was an absolute class act, like, from day one. And the people, as Colm said, that he has singing his praises, it's incredible. Like, Guardiola and Mourinho, I'm not saying they don't agree on much. I'm sure they agree on a lot more than they let on. But, like, for these two people to be speaking in such glowing terms about someone is just testament to the man himself. And it's really a black mark against the higher-ups of PSV. And obviously, I think England gets a bit messy, obviously, with the PSV exit, but, like, Newcastle particularly as well is not especially well-run club, with Freddie Shepherd and John Hall. So yeah, he came off especially well out of the situation, given how he contrasted against the higher-ups.
And one thing that kind of struck me as well, Kieran, I know you spoke about this when we were talking about Jack Charlton, is the sort of the background that Bobby Robson comes from. Grew up in Langley Park, a mining community in Durham, and the thing that Alan Shearer highlighted was that, you know, when you're growing up in these sort of estates, it's sort of a socialist mindset, that it's a community mindset, that it's everyone before yourself. And that really comes across in this as well, that Bobby Robson held those views the same way that Jack Charlton seemed to hold those views.
Yeah, there's a fundamental decency that that Robson encapsulates that Charlton had as well. And I think actually, in a way, it's familiar to people in Ireland. Like, it's kind of, it's a small community, as Ireland is, Germany is a country. So you kind of can't get away with being, you know, being a bad person, really. And, you know, you just saw even the relationship with his dad. I thought that was really lovely, like the little insight into what his old man looks like and how he treats him. And the fact that he's coming from a background with a dad who's quite in touch with his emotions, talking about breaking down when he's going down to Fulham, waving Bobby off to go down to Fulham, is not really something you need to hear about of a man of his generation. So yeah, he was coming from a good, strong, not only community, but a family as well.
Yeah. Some of the footage in this documentary is insane, that they had like these tapes from his dad from the very early days of his footballing career, as well as his first interviews as Ipswich Town manager. So that really adds to it. And I think one of my favourite parts about this documentary is the fact that they have so much footage of Bobby Robson and so many interviews that they were able to piece it together. And it was almost as if he was telling his own story, and it was being told through his voice rather than a narrator. And I know they did like sparkle a bit of star power in there with Mourinho, Ronaldo, Pep Guardiola, Gascoigne, etc. But mainly this story, up until the point of when he falls ill badly from cancer, this story is told from Bobby Robson's view. And that's something that makes this unique, Colin.
Absolutely. The point you make about the footage is a really good one, because some of it is remarkable. I mean, remarkable. And I think the best footage in the whole documentary, and there's so many good ones. Like, I love the montage of Bobby Robson and Jose Mourinho in the press conferences when Robson's trying his best to speak Spanish and Mourinho, in what we grew accustomed to be the Mourinho demeanor, is almost, you know, embarrassed by his colleagues' lack of Spanish, but still is there to help him. But for me, the most amazing footage is the penalty shootout at Italia 90 in the semi-final. And for the last two penalties, the two missed ones by England, by Stuart Pearce and Chris Waddle, the camera stays on Robson and he's fiddling with paper and he's just so still and calm. He looks like a man waiting for a bus, and he's just there, sitting there helpless, because as he says during that montage, I can't help you when you're out on the pitch. And he is watching on like every other English fan was watching on, nervously, as Waddle approached to take that penalty. And then you have the narration of Robson saying Chris Waddle used to be able to score penalties with his eyes closed in training. And you know that it's a bit like John Sitton in the documentary you were talking about last week. We didn't see the matches, we can only imagine what happened. And as the camera's on Robson, we know exactly how Chris Waddle is running up to the ball and what he does with it. But the camera stays on Robson and Waddle hits it over, England are out, and Robson just stays there for about maybe 3 to 4 seconds with a kind, which is just a defeated expression, but a calm one and a proud one. And that for me encapsulated Robson in those few seconds when he was completely silent, which was apparently quite rare. It's a beautiful, beautiful documentary.
It's brilliant. I remember the first time I watched this and I was blown away by it.
Yeah.
And I watched it again last night and it's the exact same feeling. It's so emotional.
Yeah, emotional.
It brings you through it, and it definitely does do justice to the man. It's not too often you get these documentaries that properly does justice to a figure like Bobby Robson. I think most people are aware of Bobby Robson's career, but in case you aren't, he started off his footballing career with Fulham, then moved on to West Brom, where he spent most of his time, then moved back to Fulham before he retired, and then eventually he took over Ipswich Town as a manager. And this is where the documentary sort of, the technique the director uses is sort of going in between years, and it's quite nice, but you start off getting an idea of what he is as a manager with Ipswich Town. The first interview is brilliant, Kieran, because he's straight away he's in with the sort of dry wit and charm that he had with you obviously. You're going to start off with a nice controversial question for me. So Ipswich Town are in the doldrums here. They're in a mess of the club, and he somehow guides them out and focuses on youth. And that's sort of where he starts his managerial career and where he hones what he wants to do with each club. And he sort of brings that along with him as he goes on with his career.
Yeah, I thought the Ipswich stuff is really interesting to me. He's a real legend. I mean, obviously, there's the statue outside Portman Road for him. But in terms of how it moulded the man that I think we probably came to know a little bit more around the 90s, probably, I mean, realistically, for all of us, it would be around when he was Newcastle manager, would be when it was most kind of in our consciousness. But, like, when he's in Portman Road, you know, answering the phones, and Ipswich Town, there's Mr. Robson here and stuff like this, it's incredible insight into... the job, because it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with the Orion documentary, like before the role kind of got separated out into several different parts with different people, you were responsible for everything. So he has a really poignant line where he talks about, you know, who motivates the motivator when he comes in on Monday morning, and if he's not feeling quite right, he's also got to be responsible for the people around him. And I love the training ground documentary, the training ground footage with him, particularly at Ipswich, because he's just such a light touch. Like, I think the thing is with Robson, I think what makes him so special is that he's like a constant. Like, you can rely on him to be just constantly decent and nice and with a twinkle in his eye. And I think the good thing that when you go back and watch the Ipswich footage is that he looks basically exactly the same at 30 than he does in 79. And I'm not saying that he looked old before his time, although, you know, realistically he's a footballer in the 60s, so he did. But he's got that twinkle in his eye and that lightness of touch about him. And, like, that never left him. That never left him until the very, very end. I mean, the footage that you see towards the very end is extremely touching. But he's a thoroughly decent man, and it was just nice to see his roots from a managerial point of view at Ipswich, for sure.
Yeah, and there definitely is a case study somewhere to be done about why footballers in the 60s and 70s looked as if they were 50, 56, 57 years old, and it was the case with Robson as well when he started at Ipswich Town. He was quite an old-looking 30, 35-year-old, so he was at Ipswich Town from 69 to 82, and that point that you make about him being the motivator off the motivator is quite interesting, because if you listen to current managers, and I remember Ronan O'Gara was on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about his La Rochelle career, and even how he got into coaching, and he spoke about the importance of the manager and the importance of the head coach coming in every single day with a positive attitude, no matter how bad things are going, because if he is seen to be being hurt by the results, then that will feed into the players as well. And that, it's a real mindset that Bobby Robson had at that stage. One brilliant line from this, his Ipswich Town career, and it shows you sort of where Ipswich Town are as a club, is when he's trying to organise a bit of pre-match meal at a hotel, and he says, we only eat tea and toast and a wee bit of jam. It's a wonderful time of where football is at. Colm, your thoughts on the early Ipswich Town footage in this?
Yeah, well, he said it himself that when he was appointed Ipswich manager, he had no pedigree at all, and nobody, you know, raised him as a manager. And I think it was Jackie Milburn, the legendary striker, who said upon Robson's appointment that this club is only going one way, and that's down. And then 13 years later, he leaves as an FA Cup and UEFA Cup winner. But yeah, the footage of him in the Ipswich dressing room is brilliant, because, as Kieran already says, he has alluded to that he has this incredible bond with his players. And Terry Butcher speaks so glowingly of him in a documentary, and Butcher played with him at Ipswich, and said that he just made you feel great as a person and made you feel great about your job. And that really, as two attributes to have as a manager, is phenomenal, especially if you're a player who probably would have been absconded many a times by the man you're saying it about for performances. But what I think that Robson's greatest attribute was, watching this documentary was his bravery. I mean, this is a guy who was diagnosed with cancer, was it 5 times in 15 years? And went, like, he was told he had a malignant melanoma in 1995, and then within a year, he took over as Barcelona manager, not knowing if he'd see out the year.
Yeah.
And signed Ronaldo, and was told that he would sign a three-year contract, and was said at the intervening press conference that we hope that Bobby is here for many, many years. And they knew that they were going to appoint Louis van Gaal the following summer, but Robson didn't. And that's why he turned down Newcastle in January 1997, thinking that he would remain as Barcelona manager. The fans didn't like his football, even after they won 8-0. They were booing them. He won, as I have already alluded to, the Super Cup, the Copa del Rey, and the Cup Winners' Cup, and he still got let go, and he got voted Coach of the Year, UEFA Coach of the Year, in 1997. And yet, he was shafted. And just like he was treated awfully at the end of his time in England, and as Kieran's already said, at PSV and at Newcastle, he was brave. That was his biggest attribute for me. He was brave, and above all else, he could have become very bitter with all those departures, those acrimonious departures, but he was a genuinely lovely and caring person, which is alluded to when Gazza says that Robson used to ring him up to see how he was and then visit him. Just an incredible person. And as you said, Enda, it's so emotional. It's such an emotive film. Mm.
Kieran, I've said multiple times on the show you are our resident man from across the pond, so I'll throw the first question on England to you, because I suppose, like, for a lot of us of a certain generation, Bobby Robson is the Newcastle manager, or that's where we remember him the most. But if you think of Bobby Robson, you think of Bobby Robson, the England manager who led them to the World Cup semi-final in 1990, and also had them in the World Cup in 1986. The Italian 90, we'll focus on that because that is his most successful reign as the England boss, or most successful tournament, rather. It doesn't start great, the tournament itself, but things start to turn, and eventually they get to the World Cup semi-final. But what stands out to me the most in this is his relationship with Gazza, which and leads to one of the most emotional sides of this film, or scenes in this film later on. And it just seems to be that Robson knew from the get-go that Gazza is someone special that needs to be treated special. And I think he actually says that in the documentary as well.
Yeah, he says you've got to love him and cherish him and treat him a little bit differently. And I think if there was a sentence to sum up how you approach Paul Gascoigne, it's certainly that. I think I sent into the group last night the clip of him when Robson's near his deathbed, and he talks about, his son talks about going to the testimonial in his honour. And, you know, he's very in and out. He's lacking lucidity at times, but, you know, comes away from the ground and Robson says, "How did Gascoigne play?" And then they say that to Gazza, and Gazza basically breaks down. And I've said it to you lads, I struggle to keep together every time I see that clip, because there's such a beautiful relationship there. I mean, it's not only obviously paternal, and, you know, I think Gary Lineker talks about it really nicely, where he talks about it being a, you know, there's a bit of jocularity in there, but there's the odd telling off as well. He just innately knew how to treat him, because Robson was extremely kind, and that's really what all Gazza needed. Like, Gazza had a phenomenally difficult childhood, as I'm sure we've been through with the Gascoigne documentary and the deaths that he suffered and felt responsible for. But he had this lightness, and the fact that, like, Gazza talks about Rob, you know, people coming up to him in the street and asking how he's doing, and then Gazza saying, you know, did Bobby send you? And I really like, just, it's a simple little thing, but the fact that that Gazza always calls him Sir Bobby as well is just a nice little sign of respect. And, like, he just knew how to treat Gazza, and Gazza knew that he would be safe with him. And I think, obviously, with Italia 90, with the tears and the lovely little touch on the shoulder after he's got the yellow card to say, you know, you might not be in the final, but make sure the lads can get there, or you know, he does it with a touch more, you know, beauty than that. But it's stunning. Like, I could talk about it all day, honestly, because I just think it's such a beautiful relationship, and it's not really one that you see in football, because you don't need to see it a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's quite hard to see where this would come in the modern day. I suppose the main thing about this is that we probably, this could go on, but we're probably not aware with it, of it anymore, because it's just not in the public eye as much, because footballers are protected that little bit more. In terms of the actual football side of England, what's our feelings on the PSV, setting up the PSV job while he's the England manager, because he knows that coming down the line they're ready to toss him out anyway. Was that England team good enough to win the World Cup, Kieran?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's always said to be a strangely kind of sort of dire tournament. But I mean, obviously we in Ireland and England reflect on it for different reasons and in different ways. But yeah, absolutely. Like, there was enough there. I mean, Lineker, Platt, Gazza, Butcher, like Shilton, these are all top quality players. I think they, yeah, I mean, they should have been there or thereabouts. It's just, as you say, like, it's the little, it's like the Paul Parker goal going in the way that it did, like little turns of fate go against you. But, you know, they kind of struggled through a fair bit of the tournament, but it seemed like a lot of the other teams did as well.
So we do want to talk about his later career with Barcelona. There's a lot to get into in that. And then following that, his relationship with Jose Mourinho and his career with Newcastle as well. But we do have to take a short break. It's coming up after the break. We'll be talking more about Bobby Robson's More Than a Manager documentary. Back
to life. Off the ball. Back to
reality. The trophy holders Argentina, Maradona and all opened up against one of the outsiders, Cameroon. A foregone conclusion? By no means.
Oh, Mbeek.
This is a great footballer and country produced players and go out and play that rubbish.
Yeah. This kick can decide it all. The nation holds its breath. Yes!
Elf has been deferred and Home Away has been deferred and we're on the air until 10 o'clock.
You are off.
They've got a term in Ireland that they use like, give it a last jack. We will do exactly that tomorrow night. We will give it a last jack.
Donadoni. Good parry. Schinacci.
Dancing feet. Still dancing feet.
It's Bremer for West Germany. And is that the goal that wins the World Cup?
Now, welcome back to Team 33. Endicott here with you. We are talking about Bobby Robson and his career throughout his management career. 53106 is the text number if you want to get in touch, or you can tweet us at Team 33. That's all spelled out in words. Colm Buig and Kieran Bradley are with me on the line. Colm, before we left off, we were talking about his England career and his career, his early career with Ipswich Town. But I suppose when we get further down the line, you have to look at Bobby Robson, Barcelona manager, and he took over PSV and Porto as well, had success there. But eventually he gets the Barcelona job and then he moves on to Newcastle to finish off his career. Barcelona was a really tough one for him because it's such a weird club. And I think Gary Lineker kind of explains how absolutely batshit crazy Barcelona is as a club in terms of the politics behind the scenes and the fans as well getting on your back despite success. For such a successful manager and such a charming manager at his time there, this would have been something that got on badly with Bobby Robson behind the scenes in terms of just the way that he was treated by everybody at the club.
Yeah, at the time, treated awfully. And then in retrospect, in the documentary, you have Pep Guardiola, Jose Mourinho and Ronaldo waxing lyrical and being, you know, limitlessly nostalgic about that year. And Pep himself said it was such a brilliant year in Barcelona's history, 96-97. I've already touched on it that, you know, the contract situation was appalling, that they signed him on a three-year contract, Robson, in the summer of 1996. He was fully convinced that he was staying for the duration of the contract, performance permitting. He won three trophies in his sole season. He signed Ronaldo for £20 million from PSV Eindhoven, knowing and being told that the future of your job has to do with the success of this transfer because of the world record fee. And Ronaldo subsequently scored 47 goals in his sole season at Barcelona. That's 47 goals pre-Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo era. Yeah, that was a ridiculous, ridiculous achievement. So he achieved that because that was his ultimatum. This has to be a success. Ronaldo scored a hat-trick on his debut in the Super Cup and was El Phenomenon because of his season there at the Nou Camp. And still it wasn't enough for the board. He did everything bar winning the league. and maybe that was it. But the fans seemed to turn against him. I think it was at the Barcelona's best start in the league in 33 years. And it still wasn't enough, despite the results.
Yeah, so go on, yeah. You also have the fact that he's taken over from Johan Cruyff,
yeah,
who transformed that club into something they weren't before.
Yeah, and I think the quote in the documentary is, it's like following Messi as a player. So it was incredibly tough. And I think Robson himself alludes to it in the press conference that I think he's banging the table, and it's when the American president leaves, you have to have another president. So he's saying, you know, so be it that I'm that guy. It was the modern equivalent of he was David Moyes taking over at Manchester United, except he was successful, but it still wasn't enough. And do you know what? It doesn't diminish his legacy in any way for me. I don't know if it's the same with Kieran, but I imagine it's the same for a lot of people, that I think he did a phenomenal job in that season. Now, obviously, we weren't there. We weren't there for every game. I can't comment on what the style of football was like. I've only seen the highlights. But if you look at it from a purely CV point of view, this has to, you know, he has to be the best English manager of the 20th century. Has to be. Because of what he achieved across the board. Well, he went abroad, did it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, it's not too often you see England managers actually taking a chance on continental Europe, and he did it in...
For 7 years.
Four countries. He did it in Netherlands, well, Barcelona, three countries, Barcelona, and he did it in Portugal as well. So it's not too... And on the international stage as well, he was successful. If you garner a World Cup semi-final a success, you probably would.
Yeah, as close as they've come, yeah.
And then... when he returns to England, he gets Newcastle into the Champions League spot from where they were in the table at that stage. So he has to be one of the best, if not the best, English managers of all time, I think. Is it Gary Lineker says it in the documentary?
Yeah,
it actually is. Kieran, your thoughts on his Barcelona stint? Obviously, the star of, or sort of the side star of this Barcelona stage of the documentary is Jose Mourinho, and some of the footage is brilliant.
Yeah, it's magnificent, and like he's such a dashingly handsome man. Like he was obviously when he came to Chelsea in 2004, but like it's just so striking. And like, I love there's just a lovely little aside. It's probably a clip of only 1 or 2 seconds where Robson stood next to Mourinho, just kind of like they're watching a little training session. And Robson just gives him a little nudge on the elbow, like, "All right, boy, how you getting on?" So I loved it. Like, so I mean, I can't really begin to imagine how difficult that period would have been, because I think Robson strikes you as someone who keeps his emotions for private. Like, I mean, I like the fact that Lady Elsie Robson's involved in this so heavily, because she can give a little insight into what it was like behind closed doors. Because for the most part, like he's very much aware of that kind of theme that we talked about of being a custodian of a club and you only having a certain period of time there and kind of having to keep up the public face of the manager. So he wouldn't ever be doing what, say, Mourinho would do in the latter stages of his career, like bawling out the board in public. It was obviously a very difficult time for him. And as you've all said, like, I mean, it was a successful season by any measure, you would say, you know, by the end of it. And also it's taken into account that Barcelona are not the Barcelona that we've known for the majority of our adult lives. So Barcelona were very bitty in terms of their trophy winning throughout, particularly the 80s. So I thought it was obviously a trying time, but I thought he handled himself with the dignity and grace that you associate with Robson.
Well, to put it into context, people are still referring to Johan Cruyff's Barcelona now, 30 years later. Imagine what it would have been like right after that. Like, I do think it's given a little bit of a disservice to compare him to Moyes, but it's a similar enough situation.
No, Moyes' position, his position, not his style.
Well, not even that, but like, I mean, I think Bobby Robson had a better CV than David Moyes did.
So he won 3 trophies, isn't it?
Going into the Barcelona job. But I take your point, Colm. I take your point. He's taken over from a legend of the club. But what's amazing about this is, famously, Louis van Gaal's Barcelona tenure was awful. So it just goes to show you that, like, sacking these managers because you want something, And I just can't get over how arrogant. Annoys me. It really bugs me how arrogant Louis van Gaal is in that first first interview with the press. And Bobby Robson's sitting beside him, and he's saying, "This is Van Gaal's Barcelona." To watch him crash and burn in that job is actually something that brings me a little bit of joy. So eventually, during his Barcelona tenure, he's offered the Newcastle job. And he turns it down, as you said, Colin, because he thinks that his 2-year contract is going to be, his Barcelona job is going to continue for another 2 years. He's going to be the manager, but Barcelona wanted to move him up into the upper echelons of the club and bring in Louis van Gaal. He turns down the Newcastle job, eventually comes back, and he takes over from Ruud Gullit at Newcastle. And we all know the story of Ruud Gullit's Newcastle. He dropped Alan Shearer and the club just fell apart. He was on massive wages, and it was Newcastle at one of his lowest ebbs. Bobby Robson comes in and turns it all around again. That European run in the early 2000s, even to get them into that, it shows you that not only was he a nice guy who had a bit of bite about him as well. I do think that we want to be careful just saying that he was just a nice guy, because he wasn't. He had a real edge to him that is featured in this documentary as well, and you don't survive in football without that. But he shows that he actually did have a footballing brain as well.
Yeah, again, like, there's no such thing as being too nice, and he certainly wasn't. And there's a point at the end of the documentary where there's an interview saying, well, you were appointed England manager in 1983, and he continues talking, and Robson says, no, 82, get it right. Start again. So yeah, 100% was an edge. 100%. He was naturally lovely, but there was 100% an edge to him when he needed to be. But I think he was so relatable because his anger and passion was commonplace, and it wasn't like Louis van Gaal's, as you already mentioned, Enda, where, you know, this guy's otherworldly in his arrogance. The Barcelona treatment, yeah, is ridiculous. But anyway, he gets the Newcastle job. And as you say, like, the Ruud Gullit era was a disaster. And Alan Shearer said in this documentary, if it wasn't for Bobby Robson, I would have left that club. And he saved Newcastle and he saved my career. I mean, the superlatives in this documentary are unparalleled.
I do want to jump in on that, though. Did he save his career?
Well,
Alan Shearer should have moved to Man United, and his career would have been better.
Look, Shearer, by all accounts, had ample opportunity to sign for Manchester United and repeatedly turn it down because he really wanted to play for Newcastle. So when he says he saved my career, he means saved it at Newcastle and continuing to be a Newcastle legend. Yeah. Obviously, he would have been picked up. I mean, it would have been great news for Manchester United fans if Robson didn't take over, because we might have signed him. It was, even then, it was maybe too late because Shearer had a few injuries by 1999. But even so, he rejuvenates Shearer's passion for the club and subsequently builds this fantastic youth side with Craig Bellamy and Kieran Dyer, Jermaine Genis, and then the flair of Laurent Robert. Like, Newcastle were a brilliant side in the early noughties. Because I remember when United went to St. James's Park and won 6-2 in the 2002-03 season, the back end of that, when Scholes scored a hat-trick, that was a phenomenal victory. And that's how good Newcastle were at that time. And a year later, he's shafted again. And was it that Freddie Shepherd is quoted in this documentary saying it was like shooting Bambi, getting rid of Robson?
Yeah.
I mean, like, Jesus, talk about harping on the emotion. Like we already love him. We don't need to hear that line. I mean, why did you do it so?
Yeah.
I know was he 70 or 71 at that stage when he got sacked? And then when he comes out of his house at the end to talk to the media because he says, you all have homes to go to, I assume, so I'll let you know now. And also, the heartbreaking nature of what his biggest regret was ignoring his family at times and not spending enough time with them and not coming back home from training early enough. And his son said, you know, I was always asked what it was like to talk football with Bobby Robson. He said, I never got an opportunity to do that. I mean, I feel sad that Robson's no longer around and I would never have met him. And then you hear his son talk about him. Like, we're worse off without him. And the Newcastle stuff is just outrageous.
Yeah, well, Jermaine Genius kind of makes me laugh because
he was brilliant. He was a great player.
He was a great player, but if you listen to any of his subsequent interviews, he talks about how he thought he was better than Newcastle, and it just wasn't. Like, I mean, like, he was a good player, but I mean, you're playing UEFA Cup semi-final football in Newcastle. Know your peak, man. But what I distinctly remember from that Newcastle run in Europe, and it's like I'm probably a bit too young to remember the actual footage of the games and that, but Shea Given was the main man for Newcastle at that stage, and it was such a pride. It was like a pride of Donegal that a Donegal man, because Shea Given was quite young at this stage as well, had broken into this Premier League club and is playing at the peak of European football, and it was quite a big deal for those involved and those in Donegal as well. Kieran, your memories of that Newcastle team, your thoughts on the treatment of Robson at that stage?
Yeah, it was a very good side. Like, I think there's a danger of so Newcastle in 1999 when he took over were out of their place in terms of they were thoroughly underperforming, as we've obviously alluded to. So he wasn't taking over a side that were relegation threatened in any real sense. You know, like, I remember that was quite early in the season. Then obviously the Sheffield Wednesday stuff came over. But I thought the thing that Shearer said that stood out was that he was the man that mended the dressing room, or the only man that could have mended the dressing room. And I thought that was really telling. Like, it's kind of like what you see with, it's not a perfect analogy, but what you see with people following Mourinho, like they kind of have a fairly easy run insofar as he's usually left a bit of scorched earth behind him. So it's kind of fairly easy to kind of get people up. But he did a magnificent job there. And I mean, the people they played in that Champions League run, like the likes of Barcelona again, and Shola Amiobi, I think, scored at the Nou Camp. So these are all memories for Newcastle fans that will live on for you know, many years, unfortunately, for the moment. I always remember that contrast between the likes of the personalities of Kieran Dyer, who obviously subsequently we realised had a lot of problems going on himself, but the likes of Craig Bellamy and Lee Bowyer, I think Lee Bowyer was there at the time. There was a real schism between, they were kind of backbiting and backbriefing Robson a lot. And I think it's John Hall says it at the end, they're basically, you know, it was the squad that lost him the job, but ultimately it was kind of the manager's role to keep that squad together. And I think the thing that stands out for me was when Robson's talking at the end about being, you know, artists only being rich after they're dead, and you're only appreciated after you're gone. Now, I think that only applies to a degree with Bobby Robson, because he was really loved by a lot of people, and particularly Geordie fans. But certainly, kind of in the round, when we look at Robson's career, that's something that certainly takes root. And particularly, I'm sure, and in fact, I've heard from the likes of Dyer and Bellamy that they really regret how they treated him towards the end of his career.
Yeah, it was a real basket case of a squad that they had at that stage. And the year prior to that, there was real... The year prior to him taking over, rather, there was a real split in that dugout and in the dressing room. So he did well to mend it initially, but it seemed he just couldn't keep those players from getting at each other. One thing I do want to touch on is just his exit from Newcastle, because it was quite sudden. It was quite unexpected as well. Their form did drop the following season, but John Carver, who is an assistant to Bobby Robson at Newcastle, said that the sacking essentially took place the year prior to that, after the Marseille loss in UEFA Cup semi-final. And he said that he's seen the way that Douglas Hall reacted after the Marseille game when they narrowly lost to a Didier Drogba-inspired outfit. What a player Drogba was at that stage. And he said that there was a bust-up with Bobby after the game, and it was completely uncalled for. He's essentially saying that Douglas Hall reacted to the loss badly, didn't give it time to settle, to let the dust settle, and then they kept him on. But in his head, the decision had already been made to sack Bobby Robson after that defeat. One last word on the ending to this. It's, again, emotional is the word I'm going to use. Colm, it really is. It's just, I can't think of a better word to describe than just heart-jerking or something.
Well, there's a quote at the end, and by all people, it's from Jose Mourinho, and I was nearly welling up. And it's such a beautiful line. I don't know if you know it before I say it, but it's right at the end.
I do.
And he says, a person only dies when the last person who loves him dies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Jesus, that is beautiful. And that's what I meant at the very start of this discussion when I say that this documentary brought the best out of its contributors. Because you see Pep Guardiola light up like you never see him. And you see, you know, how lovable Ronaldo is. And Alex Ferguson saying, like, he made time for me when I was a young manager, and I don't forget that. Just his humanity. And then his wife saying that, you know, when she was summing up his life, she said, you know, he lived his life like how he wanted to, and even with a lack of health. I found it incredibly inspirational, and that's where I want to leave it, because I don't think I can put it better than that in my own words.
Kieran?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really add all that much there, but I mean, he, as I've alluded to earlier, I think the end of his life was particularly poignant, and the thing that will always stand out to me is that line that he says to Gazza, or says to his son, about how did Gascoigne play, and that being put to Gazza, and then you seeing him kind of break down in this lovely, touching moment. And he was a thoroughly kind man with a streak that made him bring out the best in people, as Colin alluded to there, with the likes of Guardiola and Mourinho. And he fostered talents that we'll remember forever in the likes of Ronaldo. So he's not only a decent man, he's a fantastic manager, and he's an inspiration to us all.
Well, there's actually three quotes that stood out for me in this documentary. Actually, one of them's not from the documentary, it's one from his book. The first one is, we only ate tea and toast and jam, because that's it just stuck with me, it's just hilarious. The second one is, and I think this sums him up as a manager, if you're not bright and you don't know about football, they will bury you. And they haven't buried me yet. That was during his time at Newcastle, I believe, that he had left Barcelona, and it kind of summed up his mental strength as well as sort of his love for the game. And the final one is, this is an extract from his own autobiography, which came out several years before he died. I think it was 2005, the book came out. And it was him sort of trying to describe why he got into the mindset of the club that he was managing. And it's, what is a club in any case? It's not the building or directors or the people who are paid to represent it. It's not the television contracts, get-out clauses, marketing departments, or executive boxes. It's the noise, the passion, the feeling of belonging, the pride in your city. It's a small boy clambering up stadium steps for the very first time, gripping his father's hand, gawping at the hallowed stretch of the turf beneath him, and without being able to do a thing about it, falling in love. We'll take a quick break.
Some of the boys are really obsessed with me, and some of them, they will wake up in the morning, as always, the first thing they think that comes to their mind is Jose Mourinho.
I'm European champion, so I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one. And I'm sorry, I'm a bit arrogant. We have a top manager.
Until the moment they have a manager that wins four Premier Leagues for them, I'm the number one. Because when I left the club last season, I left the club in the Champions League, winning the Champions League group, qualifying to the Champions League knockout phase, playing the second leg at home, with the advantage to be the champion of the group. So if they win the Champions League last year, they could be playing in Europe this season. So it's not my fault, it's the fault that the ones that stay here and didn't win the Champions League.
3-0. Do you know what this means? 3-0. But also means 3 premierships, and I won more premierships alone than the other 19 managers together. 3 for me and 2 for them. Respect, 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 man.
Now, welcome back. So that is about all we have time for on tonight's show. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Kieran and Colm as well for their contribution tonight. We'll be back again discussing more football documentaries next week. I think we're going to touch on Paul Gascoigne. And I also do want to say that after our discussion around Leighton Orient, a club for a fiver last week, John Sitton, who's the manager of Leighton Orient in that documentary, got in touch with us, and he's going to do an interview with us in the next few weeks or so. So that's really exciting. It'll be nice to get his perspective of what went on at Leighton Orient during that time, because I know the documentary itself didn't sum up everything that went on in the background. They only had a certain amount of access. So it's going to be nice to get John's point of view on the show as well. If you want to listen back to any of the show, as I said, you can find us as part of the OTB Podcast Network, available now on the OTB Sports app, which is available now to download in the Google Play Store and Apple Store, and it is brilliant. Has all the best OTB sports stuff on there, articles, videos, podcasts, you name it, all the classic Team 33s as well. So check that out in your Google Play Store or Apple Store as well. We'll be back again at the same time, same place. Until then, take it away, Johan. Just hold